Well, welcome everybody to Forever Bristol City Podcast, the post-Plymouth Argyle review episode, and we're in joyous mood. It finished Ashton Gate on a not so windy in the end, Tuesday evening, City 4, Plymouth 1. I'm delighted to be joined by three of my regulars, that's Ian, Mark and Neil. Neil sat with me, for those of you that are viewing it on YouTube or live on Twitter. But as I normally do, I'll come to each of you in turn. A brief 30 seconds on the game, what your thoughts were coming away from Ashton Gate. You first, Mark.
Fantastically entertaining South West derby, where City's fast start was matched by clinical finishing. They were all over Plymouth like a rash and thoroughly deserved a 4-1 win with outstanding performances from Zach Viner, Matty James, and the whole team worked as a unit to get City's biggest home win since Hull City in May 2022. Still little things to be done, a little bit sloppy in transition, but lots to look forward to for the rest of the season when we get players back.
Excellent. You next, Ian. Sorry, your quick resume on the game.
Just go through the positives, Dave. 3 points, 4 goals, scored in the first half for the first time this season, and we got 3 of them. Best home performance of the season, although that is quite a low bar, but it certainly was far and away. Inexplicable selection from Schumacher. I don't know what he was trying to do or prove. Good first half, created chances. We crossed better. We had less possession again, which is always a good thing. Argyle only had 2 shots on target, albeit I thought they looked pretty good coming forward, especially when they got they had their best players on. Home record improves. We're up to 5th. We've got a +3 goal difference, and we might even have Weidman back Saturday.
Excellent. Neil, your thoughts?
Well, I'm not going to go through what I agree 100% obviously with what Mark and Ian has said, but it had a League One feel to it yesterday, the game. I thought Schumacher, you can't make 7 changes in the Championship. The Championship is a relentless league. He took out Barley Mumba, he took out Whittaker, he took out Hardy, he took out Finn Azaz. He took out key players in there, and then he tried to justify it with the 4 I brought in. Oh, they were
great. Earl regulars.
Regulars from us last season. Stephen, that was regulars in League One. Championship is a whole other ball game. And I think he completely misguided last night in changing 7. I don't think you can go into a Championship game and change 7 players around. First off, they were so disjointed. You could tell that they weren't actually around it. Bringing Dan Scar in. Dan Scar's a League One defender, isn't it? And next to him is the gas head from last year, Mr. Gibson.
Yeah, so he was trying to justify Schumacher. I think the telling comment for me was that he said they wanted it more, meaning us, Bristol City. How I've loved to hear that, because how many times over years have we said the opposition have wanted it more? This is what City are about now, is that intensity and commitment. And as I said on a Twitter post last night, or an X post, as we should call it now, bring on Leicester. But let's get back to the teams, or our team. Mark, temptation to change, but he didn't. Many people would have thought Taylor Gardner-Hickman might have come back in for George Tanner, but he's stuck with the starting 11. No surprises there for you, no?
Yeah, not really. I mean, I suppose at the back of our minds, will Rob Dickey come in for Naismith, push Naismith up into midfield? But then he'd have to take one of Williams, James or Knight out. But he obviously trusts Naismith back there, and his performance has proved why he's playing as left centre back. You know, he's reliable. He can time his tackles, and he's got a fantastic range of passing, and he can step out of defence. They can split the centre backs with him and Zach Viner. So yeah, no surprises. It all comes down to will City score from their chances. That was the difference.
Yeah, Ian, the front three after the West Brom game, or towards the end of the West Brom game, they looked a little bit leggy. The substitutions weren't done until, I think it was the 70-odd minute on Saturday against West Brom. He stuck with that front three, though. Were you happy with that team selection?
Oh, I think we've got to. because what is behind them isn't as good. I mean, you saw what he thought about. I mean, he was trying to close the game out. I thought we managed the game well in the second half. He was trying to close the game out, and you can tell that when he brought on Roberts as opposed to Bometi to replace Sam Bell. And if I saw Roberts start in that position, particularly away from home, it wouldn't surprise me because Mometi seems to have fallen right down the pecking order. So, no surprises. I'm glad he made the substitutions when he did, particularly with the Leicester game coming up on Saturday, which will be nice if he attends. And originally, they were saying that with this back operation he's going to have, before I forget to say it, good luck to him with that because back operations are awful things. And the only he'd ever done is a last resort. So, no surprises.
No.
He likes that midfield. And why wouldn't you? And if you'd have said to me before the two games, look, you know, you don't need to play them, but we'll just give you 4 points. How do you feel about that? I'd have bitten your arm off.
I think so, we said that. We expected it to be, it would have been nice to beat West Brom, but if you're looking at the 4 points in the two home games, which we wanted, you'd have expected it to be 1+3, certainly not 3+1. Okay.
Well, last night, Dave, we scored 3 goals in the first half.
And yeah, that's what
we scored in the first half. Against West Brom, if we'd have scored a goal or two in the first half, we'd have won that game, even though they outplayed us in the second.
Yeah, no, we did enough in that particular one. Neil, if you look at the lineup, Tanner, you know, he's in there on merit. It would have been easy for Nigel to bring Taylor Gardner-Hickman in. We'll talk about his substitute performance in a minute, but, you know, no complaints about that lineup that started the game.
I think what Pearson, he puts trust in his players, doesn't he? Mm. He empowers his players. And I think ultimately we didn't concede against West Brom.
No.
So I think, you know, he's almost saying to Tanner, right, okay, we didn't concede, back four, easy to make changes, but, you know, I believe in you, I trust in you. And I think the thing with Tanner, when you watch him, when the substitutions are going to happen, he's always looking nervously over at the bench the whole time. He's thinking he's going to get pulled every time, So, and sometimes there's a nervousness to his play a little bit. So I think he's just trying to give him the confidence to say, I believe in you, I trust in you.
I think that you're right there with confidence, because you look at a player like Knight, yeah, he's got that look of determination. He's not lacking in confidence, whereas I've not met Tanner in person, but you just look at facially at him, he looks a nice guy, but you know, as you say, I noticed him look across to the bench.
I also think one of the things I was going to say last night is I think perhaps having Naismith back there, who's a ball player, makes them better players. You know, his vision, his passing, his calmness under pressure. I mean, one-on-one, you know, at pace, if he gets exposed, we know that he's in trouble. But it's becoming quite a tight unit. I think the only one that you could perm possibly is Tanner. But both Pring and Tanner are a little bit susceptible to pace that, you know, we may touch on. Maybe not
looking forward to Leicester.
Brilliant defensively, but good in attacking positions. But as a unit, that's what you want, isn't it? You like, if you can play the same four players, but you can trust them. That's what Pearson wants, and that's because they're shutting out the opposition.
No, you're right. Okay, so Ian, there were 3,000 who made their shortest journey of the season up to Ashton Gate, and they were chanting with less than 2 minutes on the clock, Bristol is a, won't repeat the word, something whole. I want to go. Before they completed the sentence, we were 1-0 up inside 3 minutes. How did you see that goal? Was it a well-worked routine, or we were just so much more on it than they were? Talk us through the goal as you saw it.
Well, it was a routine. Whether it was well-worked or not, I don't know, because I don't know what Williams was meant to do with the ball. Was he meant to put it into the near post for Sam Bell to try and get something, or somebody get something on it, or did he completely mishit it? So, but it was a set-piece move. I mean, I think if you'd have played up front against Plymouth last night, Dave, you might have got a goal, which brings me nicely on to Naki Wells, because at the moment, he couldn't hit a cow's backside with a banjo, Naki, and he's just getting more and more pressure. And when he got booked last night for kicking the ball away like a muppet, I thought, hello, he's going to be, as soon as we score again, get him off, because otherwise you're going to get a second yellow and he'll miss a game. But anyway, that's by the by. Yeah, I don't know whether it's going to be given to Sam, because he got the deflection. It definitely hit the defender before on the goal line before it went over the line, but it was on target. So, well, call it what you like. We were a goal up at home and playing with a lot of confidence.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the goal several times and I sort of lost the ball, but that's probably more about my eyesight. And I've seen it from the different angles. I mean, great to get a goal that early, Neil. You know, just it's what we just. I mean, the first half, we played better in the first half against West Brom and got no reward. But here we were against inferior opposition. It doesn't come much better than that, the goal inside 3 minutes.
Well, I think what was impressive last night was there have been times in the past at home and away for that matter where we've scored early goals. We start the first 15 minutes of the game, we often start with intensity. We often start with pace and the full press on and we get a goal. And then in the past, we've got a goal and then we sat back and allowed the other team to get back into it. And then it's 1-1 at half time, or we get into the second half, they reset at half time, they come on. That didn't happen last night. We'd scored the goal off 2 minutes and the intensity only increased, I would say, rather than decrease. And then it was two, and then, as we'll come to.
Well, let's come on to you, Mark, for the second goal. I mean, you know, we were rampant, as one of you had said earlier. You know, they looked like a side that had made seven changes, never mind the fact that they brought four of those were so-called regulars coming back in. But a Sykes shot and Matty James, bit of an unsung hero for us, but nice for him to get a goal, wasn't it? But how did you see that goal?
Tanner actually released Knight on the right-hand side. A brilliant ball, just slide pass. On the six yard line, he plays the ball back, and the keeper pushes it out. And their number 19, right, ball watching, he was just miles away, and James came in, probably about 2 yards behind, like he was finishing the 400 meter relay, and just pushed it into the roof of the net. But I mean, they were rattled, and by that time we pinned them back in their own half. But they were just slow to every single ball, Plymouth. Yeah. You know,
they did look a bit lean.
They were all over the place. I mean, that first goal typified it. Awful defending. But the second one, great pass by Tanner to release Knight. Knight plays it back. The keeper comes out, just pushes it out. And James runs on and pushes the ball with his instep up into the roof of the net.
Yeah,
but I think I think Schumacher would have hooked that number 19 because he should have got to the rebound, but he was miles away.
Yeah, Ian, Matty James, you know, he's Mr. Dependable for Pearson, isn't it? He comes up with the odd goal now and again. He's certainly not prolific from midfield, but interesting, he lasted the full 90 minutes. You know, and it was saying, you know, he is the talisman sort of player for us, isn't he? And for Nigel Pearson, having played for him at Leicester.
Well, Matty James, I made the point in the last pod we did, Dave, that Matty James is like Cole Skuse. You notice him more when he's not playing than when he is. And the amount of times he tidies things up, takes balls off the back four, clears up a load of rubbish in midfield on occasions. He doesn't waste the ball very much. And it was interesting that last night was the first time he scored a goal after the 90th minute. So that was the only time he scored a goal that's preceded the 90th minute of the game. So well done to him. I thought, people saying, well, he put it into the net. There were three defenders on the line. He could have tried to drive it and hit one of them, but nice finish into the roof of the net. Yeah, James is the key player. He's the pivot, either as a single pivot or a double pivot in that midfield. And the fact that Joe Williams is playing, touch wood, his best football for us, and he's uninjured, is a real bonus. So, that's why I think Pearson will continue with those two and Knight in midfield. And there's no real reason to change it. I don't think we've got anything better to come in, frankly.
No, absolutely right. Neil, but, you know, 2-0 up, looked a mess, really. Their own fans were saying, you're an embarrassment. After it was 2-0, Bell had a shot saved. Sykes headed over. Campering was on the far post and ballooned the ball over when the ball reached him from that corner. But we were being a bit sloppy at times, yeah? and maybe a bit too overconfident, and Plymouth put themselves back in it with their goal. How did you see their goal? Do you agree that we were, you know, we could have been even further ahead, but there was some loose passes going around. We were over-egging it at the back just a tiny bit.
That Bell chance for 3-0 was... Thankfully, didn't come back to haunt us, but he really should have buried that. He cut back inside. He could have just opened up his body. He's got a thing about hitting a near post. Mm. He did it a couple of times in a thing. He tried to bring it inside and hit. Whereas there's more space at the far post rather than the near post, but he tries to cut it back a little bit with it. That should have been 3-0. And that was, what, within 15?
Yeah.
15 minutes, it would have been 3-0. Like when we played West Brom with 3-0.
That's right.
After 16 all those years ago.
Yeah.
Now, there is a sloppiness, but then I think once you're playing at intensity and once you go at it, you've got to be on it. And that's quite tiring. Mm. And I think you're in that comfort zone. You've got 2-0 up. It's easy to sort of sit back and then stroll it around.
Just take a breather after that start.
Yeah, and all we need to do is start. And there started to be a few misplaced passes. That goal right in front of me in a dolman, their goal. Sykes didn't track his man back, and then there was a double overload against Tanner. And Tanner's, you know, half tackled, didn't, and then stuck his foot out, kind of kicked it, but didn't really kick it with any, just get rid of it.
Mm.
That's Tanner, unfortunately. There's still that element to his game about, you know, and I'm not picking on him that, but I think there's still an element of rabbit caught in the headlights a little bit with him. Sometimes, you know, he just, get rid, yeah. And frenetic type thing. There's not too much composure about Tanner. So he kicks it into the middle. And to be fair, fantastic finish by Randall.
Yeah.
From outside the box. Kept it low.
Straight as a die.
Mark, that was their first shot.
Of course. Mark, did you think we were becoming, you know, not to say the goal was inevitable, but Neil's just said about Tanner not clearing. You know, you can't blame Max for the goal. A BBC report said it was a poor clearance by Max in the first instance.
That was the one they missed.
Sorry, my mistake. We've made City buck their ideas up a bit after they've maybe taken their foot off the gas, Mark. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, we lost the ball in transition. And as Neil said, I mean, it was Callum Wright, the header right on the left-hand side, who burst forward. And Tanner just hooked the ball straight across the box, and it was a beautiful finish. Low, hard, got his knee right over the ball, drilled the ball in, beat O'Leary with the pace the ball, and it would have come through players as well. So it wasn't even a half chance, and that's what you do at this level. You know, if you half chances are conceded, and then that carried on. There was some loose passing. I think Viner gave the ball away, and Viner and Naismith have to do recovery tackles.
Yeah.
O'Leary's pass, short pass. Was run back, and O'Leary came out and narrowed the angle well, and the combination of that and Viner, who looked like he might have injured himself overextending his knee, meant the player passed the ball, you know, hit the ball wide. But yeah, City were sloppy in transition, where they could have just calmed the game down a little bit and been a little bit less frenetic. I mean, what was just apparent about Plymouth was they were just so naive. They kept wanting to go forward, but their shape, pushing on the fullbacks, left the centre backs exposed and huge amount of space. For our third goal, which we can segue now.
We come on to that now, Ian. Let's look at that third goal. It was set up by Knight, but I can't remember the last time I've seen one of our players have so much open ground to run into,
No, it was a excellent pass. It was an excellent finish. But like you say, an awful lot of room. The only way he was going to make a mistake, Knight, was to overhit the ball. And he didn't. He played it into the path of Sykes, so Sykes didn't really have to break his run much. But he had so much time and no covering defender getting back. I often look at things like that and think, hang on, has this bloke got too much time here? Is he going to overthink it? And put it over the bar. And we've seen plenty of that over the years, but great finish.
It was a little bit like the way he hit it across goal. And unlike, you know, as Neil was saying a moment ago, Sam Bell trying to go near post, but it had an element. I mean, his goal at Swansea was more skillful, but it was a little bit like that, the way he dragged it across goal and knocked it in the far side. And, you know,
he waited for the goalkeeper to commit himself. And as soon as the goalkeeper committed himself down, then he put the ball the other side of him. And at that point, unless you get an arm up or you lift your leg and you get lucky, you're not going to save it. And the key thing is to get it on target, because I think if he'd have got it on target and the keeper had got a touch, it might have gone across the goal and Naki might have had a tap in. But it didn't. And it was a really good finish. He's in form. He's first choice in that position by a mile. So carry on, McDuff.
Yeah. And it's interesting that, as I say, Knight, right, there's a lot of talk on, I think the forum's been down for the last 12 hours. It wasn't working late last night nor this morning.
Yeah.
But people are already making this comparison, Neil, between, and I'll ask each of you this question, between Knight and Scott. Now, it would have been fantastic if we'd have had both, right? But, you know, are they, you know, people are saying Knight is a bargain at 2 million and, you know, is he... He's not the same sort of player as Scott, is he? Because he busies himself around, doesn't he? Yes, but what did you think of his performance last night? Because he was chasing and harrying all the time in a way that Andy Vyman does. And as somebody said, I think, on Twitter this morning, imagine if we've got two players playing in that advanced role, putting them under pressure all the time. But what did you think of that?
Know who he reminds me of?
Oh.
Gary Shelton.
Good old Gazza, yeah.
Back in the day, just that busy player in the middle of the park. The amount of times that where a Plymouth player would be dawdling on the ball and Knight would just go up and nick it off.
Yeah.
And then he'd appear here, he'd appear there, appear on the edge of their box, appear there. There's a busyness around him and he's always sort of on the move with it. I'd like to see his sort of stats. Obviously, he's had a 4 games in 10 days or something like that. So they've obviously been withdrawing him on the hour.
Yeah.
To look after him and look after his minutes. They probably looked at the stats and gone, once he gets to 10K or something like that, get him off or whatever. Yeah. Look, manage his loads and such like. But he's a different player to Scott.
Yeah.
He's a very different player to Scott. Scott would, from a standing spot, just have that acceleration, wouldn't he? And the assister that we always spoke about with Scott.
Yeah.
With Knight, what was really impressive about that third goal for me is he got hold of the ball, he's there, and there was a pass down the middle to Naki. And he paused because he just didn't rush it. And then he waited for Sykes to come up on the right. And then, as Ian quite rightly said, played the pass in beautifully in for Sykes. But it was that pause and that composure in the midfield, not to force a pass straight through, not to take the first option, probably not even take the second option on the left with Bell. He took the third option with Sykes. But they allowed him far too much space. I mean, really. Yeah. I mean, that was.
It was the high line. It's just
goal.
So naive. Just kamikaze play. They push right up to the halfway line, and Knight comes back, and then plays the ball around the corner. And of course, Sykes is in his own half when he starts.
Oh, so I can't remember the last time.
And he's galloping into space. The difference between Knight and Scott had a better all-round game, but I think we would like to have seen Scott in more advanced positions last season than we did. I think that's the thing we didn't get to see. We didn't get to see him in the head of the ball get on the end of the things. I think the West Brom game in the cup where he did that, where he ran into the area and he got a tap in. We just didn't see him get enough touches in the box. But he could break lines from tight positions. He could dribble past players at ease, and of course he won a lot of free kicks because of his ability to shield the ball. Knight is a great player with space. He's got vision. And his timing, I think, you know, the way he times his runs, I think we'll see him get lots of chances and hopefully, you know, 5 to 10 goals. I think, why shouldn't he be aiming for that? Because, he's got the ability to get on the end of a lot of crosses and break lines. But he's not the player that Scott is. He hasn't got the ability, but he's got a lot more determination
That's what I'm saying. It's sort of, I mean, Ian was shaking his head a minute ago and agreeing with Neil, in effect disagreeing with me, that they're not the same player. And we can only ponder what it would have been like having both. But Ian, you know, your thoughts on Knight. I mean, is he our next, you know, nest egg building player? I saw he was man of the match for Ireland against Netherlands last week, and non-Bristol City fans were saying, what's this player? Why isn't Ian a top six Premier League side? Yeah, but your thoughts on that?
I think people saying that are morons, to be perfectly honest. Why isn't he in the top six Prem? You were telling me he's in the same... Bruno, he's as good as Bruno Fernandes, Kevin De Bruyne.
All right. Gundogan. No, but this wasn't a Bristol City fan.
I mean,
anyone saying that.
Hang on, yeah. Dave. Hang on. Anyone saying that can get right in the bin. All right? Because he's not. Let's just not start doing backflips, because we bought a bloke for 2 million. I like him as a player. I tweeted out last night during the game that what he does need to do on occasions is calm down, because I understand this runs everywhere, wouldn't get on the team coach at Swansea because he wanted to run back to Bristol and all this. And that's all good jolly japes and good fun. But he will, in the course of a season for Bristol City, he'll get more assists and more goals than Alex Scott. Now, to be honest, that's a pretty low bar, but what Scotty had that he may not get his goal involvement. So I think so far, so good. Don't overhype the bloke.
No.
And let's keep him progressing. I think there are times, I mean, he gives the ball away a bit, but if you're trying to do stuff, you will give the ball away sometimes. Yeah. On the defenders, when we were talking about mistakes, in the last couple of games, Zach Viner's made more mistakes than George Tanner, Cam Pring and Cal Naismith put together. But what he's got is great recovery pace. Now, you saw it last night. You saw that tackle he made on Thomas Asante on Saturday was nothing short of world-class defending. But if he hadn't tried to get round and get the ball off Asante and made a mistake on the halfway line, the chance would have never happened, because we were two high up and Asante got in behind him. And there was no cover. And it was Zach's fault, but he made a brilliant recovery running tackle. The same when Ryan Hardy got in behind him.
Right,
and
at the end of the game. Playing. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting.
Hardy could have scored twice in the last 3 minutes.
He did. So I'm glad he won. Yeah, he had.
Yeah,
he won. Was a header as well. I'm glad he won. But let's go on to that in a second. Ian, you say about the powers of recovery. I can remember when Keith Curl came to play for City back in the 80s, and he went on and enjoyed a career at the highest level, played for Man City when they're not the side they are now, but Keith Curl, and he wasn't a natural defender. I think he was a winger when he started at the Gas. He wasn't a natural defender, but everybody used to say about Keith Curl, it was his power of recovery, and that's what Zach has got. Let's move into the second half.
It was his pace, Dave.
And he had pace. He had a bit more of a line of pace about
him. £10,000 from Torquay, and we sort of signed another bloke called Trevor Morgan, centre forward. Now, Keith had superb pace, and remember then as well that the back pass law wasn't in, so it made defending easier.
True. Let's move on then. Neil, second half, we used all five subs in two batches in good time, three on the hour, two with 20 minutes to go. Yeboah's becoming a bit of an impact player for us, isn't he?
He is. I mean, there's a rawness to him, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, he hasn't quite learned yet that he goes over physical, gives away needless fouls when he doesn't know how to do it alongside it. There's just this little bit.
Got booking last night as well, didn't he?
He did, That could have gone when he came off of the air a little bit there. And we could probably talk about the ref in due course.
Yeah.
But but I think with him, there's just sometimes that balance a little bit. Like there was a thing at the weekend with Peters, when Peters is wrestling with him, so Yeboah picks him up, throws him to the ground.
Similar happened not long after he came on last night as well.
Yeah, there's just an element of, I need to impose myself on the game. I need to bring my physicality. We talk about pace, but he hasn't quite learned how to generate that space.
Yeah,
within it, watching him last night, I'm like, God, there's a unit, but as a 17-year-old unit.
Yeah.
I don't quite see his link-up play and stuff like that. We're kind of using him as like a wrecking ball a little bit there. You know, he's this bundle of energy where he's just going to sprint.
Well, he's a nice, I mean, for the players that we've seen for other teams in years gone by, do you remember Luwalua? There was two Luwalua brothers. They've got that explosive pace and, you know, it's the end product. That's the thing.
I think you bring him on with tired defenders who are just like, oh,
let's see what he does. It's
going to be really annoying, isn't it?
With Yeboah, I mean, he was a pest. He was blocking passes. You know, he was getting back in defence. He was trying to make tackles. You know, he worked extremely hard. I think the problem was we just didn't really have control of the ball. And even Harry Cornick hardly got any touches. You know, playing centrally. And I love to have seen Yeboah with some space in front of him, like Mark Sykes, attack the defender. But he didn't get the ball. What he was doing was chasing down defenders, and that was much of our problem really, because Williams and James couldn't exert any control on midfield. That was the problem, you know. And it'll be the same problem against Leicester, because they'll have a lot more pace and they'll be a lot more intense.
We'll talk about the Leicester
better,
game in a minute.
Better than Plymouth were, but yeah, he didn't really get the chance to show his skill.
Sticking with you, I'll call the goal the icing on the cake, because at 4-1 with 10 minutes to go, you know, no side is going to lose that. You know, 3-1 with 10 minutes to go, you know, you always don't want to concede. But the fourth goal, classy, wasn't it? Take us through it as you saw it.
Yeah, I mean, Cal Naismith just strode forward, faked that he was about to shoot, and then just played a lovely blind left-footed pass into the channel. And there's Cornick, controls the ball, left foot, sweeps it past the keeper to his right, and it's job done. Great finish by Cornick. And that reminded me a little bit of the Benningham pass to Harry Kane. Oh, obviously, he didn't have his back to goal, but it was just a penetrating pass, and Cornick finished it beautifully, and that was job done. Because even at 3-1, Plymouth kept going forward. There was an intensity to their play. Whittaker had looked a lot better than Wright had on the right-hand side, and he ripped Pring a couple of times just by using his body strength. And they'd had chances. So really, that put the game to bed completely. A great way to finish the night.
Yeah. How did you see the goal, Ian? I mean, Naismith was very advanced putting that ball forward. Was that because we'd altered the formation a little bit at the back? Yeah, playing with more of a three? Or was it that he took the opportunity and burst through? Because it was a very advanced position for him.
This is another reason why some people say Cal Naismith would be better off in midfield, because he could do that more often. And he's created several chances from close range this season, not long sweeping diagonal passes we come to expect. But the distribution, I was disappointed with some of Zach's distribution last night. His diagonal distribution is very good. His straight line distribution is occasionally poor. So I'd be, there's an argument to move Cal forward, but the question then begs, well, okay, then who are you going to leave out? And at the moment, you wouldn't, anybody that was left out of that side, this a midfield player out of the three we got, would feel our done by. So I think if it isn't broke, don't fix it. We've let in one goal the last two games against good attacking opposition. You know, that West Brom, and if you look at the players West Brom brought off the bench, and in fairness, the players of Plymouth, they brought their best three strikers off the bench last night. I watched Plymouth last night, and I thought if they played the same team they played against Preston, they'll be fine this season. But the only thing that will really get to them is injuries, because they obviously haven't got a great deal of squad depth. And when you looked at the analysis of their game at Preston, they completely dominated the game.
They did.
And were unlucky not to win it, never mind lose it. So that's Championship football. That's the way it goes when you're playing against really good players. But lovely no-look pass from Naismith. He's got that in his locker. When you look at Harry Kornick, who I thought was effective when he came on last night, yeah, as well as he could be.
I was going to say, nice for him to get a goal, only his second league goal.
But you've got him in Naki, him in Naki, who you'd look at, and you look at their numbers, and to be honest, they're dreadful. I mean, they neither of them, you're not confident that either of them are going to score in a game, which when you think that's your more or less your two number nines.
Well, the good thing is, we got Tommy Conway to come back. And then, but then you look at a player like Hardy, who did come on for them, who looked a bit of a unit. He's sort of got that physique, a bit like Yates as well, who was at Blackpool, but is maybe...
He's better than Yates. He's ex-Glasgow Rangers, 6 foot two. But he's got pace and he's got ability as well as...
Hardy we're talking about, yeah, obviously.
Ryan Hardy, yeah. Now, I'd love to see him at Ashton Gate. I mean, I know we've got Tommy to come back and people are saying, or the club are saying, they're thinking he'll be back in October, which, let's face it, what are we, 10 days
well,
off
it'll be
October
after the next. It'll be after the next international break, I would think. Ian.
Hopefully, Dave, yeah. And hopefully we'll have Eamon back and Rob possibly going to be a bit longer, but they say he looks like a colossus with all this gym work he's done, which... As long as he doesn't lose any pace, that's not going to do
anything. Who's that? He's going to look like a colossus.
Rob Atkinson.
Rob Atkinson. Okay.
Yeah, he's put on about half a stone or a stone of muscle. Yeah. Because
I was told that Benarous is going to be back on the grass in a couple of weeks. So that's from a fairly
reliable source. That's fantastic. That's another midfielder.
It's another one to add to the list. Neil's. Back on for the Leicester game, but so I'm going to move back there. Those that are watching it live, I'm now.
I'll just say that City's determination was typified by Zach Fiennes's recovery when the ball was played behind him to Ryan Hardy. I mean, O'Leary came out, did very well, slowed Hardy down. He poked the ball past him. And then it was a foot race with Hardy. I thought, first of all, that it was just drifted into the goal. But no, it was a foot race between Hardy and Viner. And Viner made a great save.
And it was a lung-busting challenge, as someone said. Yeah. So you're 4-1 up. And this is the thing at the moment, is that intensity that we've got. And when I got home last night, you know, I said to Matt, I said, you know, we're not as good, but we've got an identity. We're starting to see an identity of how Pearson wants to play, I think. Yeah, with the runners and some of the pace that we've got in there. I have to say, Ian, what did you think of Taylor Gardner-Hickman, who came on into the middle of the field? Yeah, we've seen him as the obvious choice to replace Tanner, but I thought he looked pretty useful. Would you agree with that?
I like him as a player, Dave, but I can also see why every manager they've had, and Carlos Corberan, who knows far more about football than I ever will, and coaching, was scratching his head and saying, where do I play this bloke? Is he a right back? Is he a holding midfielder? Is he a 10? Is he a wide midfielder? What is he? I think he's a central midfielder. I think he's one of those guys that can pretty much play anywhere. Because he's 6 foot two. He can tackle. He's got a good shot on him that I've seen on various video clips. If you listen to West Brom fans, and I always listen to the fans more than any journalist up there, because sometimes they've got an axe to grind. And the fans that watch him home and away said exactly that. Where'd you play him? Really like him as a player. Not very good in the air for a bloke of his size was one criticism, which I think, to be honest, I think George Tanner and Cam Pring are. And we're doing this long kick out to the left wing and pushing Cam forward to flick the ball on because we got no height in the forward line. We used to do it with Aidan Flynn, Nathan Baker.
Flynn out on the touchline, didn't we? Yeah.
Yeah, and Nathan Baker. That's how Nathan Baker got his last concussion. I like him as a player. I think if the sort of money we're talking about is 1.3 million in total, and there seems to be various discussions around, we've already given him 700,000 as a loan fee, and we've got to give him another 1.3, so that makes him a 2 million player. I think that's wrong. I don't know, but...
Well, we don't know, Ian. We just
When we get to talk to Brian Tinian, perhaps we can ask him, because obviously we won't be able to ask the CEO.
Well, we come on to his departure in a moment. Mark, what did you think of the referee last night?
I don't think we noticed him that much, which means that the game flowed. He rightly booked Tanner and Wells for needlessly kicking the ball away, and we know there's zero tolerance for that. So that was just pure stupidity. And I just hope the club find those players, because they're not going to learn. I mean, you know, they keep doing that, they're going to get a ban. You know, that dissent, just completely stupid. Why do it? Yeah. But yeah, didn't really notice the referee, which meant that the game flowed well, and I think, you know, it was evenly officiated, which was a good thing. What quite tickled me, of course, is after our first goal, there was this break.
I thought, forgot what to the hell's going on? That. Yes.
Well, it looked like he was testing the goal line technology, because he got the ball.
His equipment packed up.
Yeah, because he got the ball and he was passing it over backwards and forwards over the line, wasn't he?
I thought it was going to be a disallowed goal on the basis of VAR when there's no bloody VAR.
Yeah, we don't have VAR, Dave.
Well, no, I know. That's what I mean.
I know what you mean.
The referee, he wears a wristwatch.
Yeah.
And it tells him if the ball's crossed the line.
Yeah, well, pings, doesn't it, if it crosses the line? Yeah.
Yeah, well, it didn't ping when the ball went in the net. So he had to stop the game, go over to the sideline. He had to have a discussion with the fourth official along the lines of, what the hell do I do? And they I don't know whether they repaired it or whether he had the fourth official's watch or whatever, but they got over it in quite a short time. I mean, I was with you, though, because the commentators on Robin's TV, and I must make this point, they've all been on the course, and I want to go on the same course is Ali Hines and Trevor Challis have been on, the Can You course. Now, you're going down the line. Now, can you cross it? Can you play inside? Can you get past him? Can you get every 2 minutes? Lads, find some different vocabulary, because it gets tedious. And against West Brom, I had to switch the commentary off. And the other thing is, they need to be careful, because the pictures are in advance. The commentary is slightly in advance of the pictures. So you get, great goal. And it's in the net, yeah.
No, it's like, it reminds me of like one of those Brazilian soap operas, and the doorbell rings and it's hello.
yeah, that's like, it is. Yeah. I mean, but this can you.
That's
think?
Like sometimes yeah. when and you watch the news,
it's not just them
the
doing
sometimes,
it.
Sometimes the lips, the mouth, there's nothing worse than the mouth.
Yeah.
But they've, it's this, there's pundits doing it on the BBC and, oh, well, he's got, it's always in the past tense. Then it goes straight to the current tense, which is really good. He's got past him. Now, can he find the cross? I don't know, mate. Can he? I'm struggling.
It's got nothing to do with football. Talking about continuity, it has a bit, you know, with things being out of alignment. Sadly, I'm somebody who watches Coronation Street, and I watch, and I've said a couple of times, you know, yeah, they're having... Do they have a different time and light zone up there? Because they're having breakfast, the next minute they're having somebody's bloody stag party in the next house up the street. Do you ever watch that, or am I just a sad bastard?
No, I'm just going back to Ian. I mean, that sort of commentary lend itself to snooker, wouldn't it? Now can he's potted the red. Now can he pot the black? Now can he pot now there's a red on the edge of the cushion. Can he pot the red? That would lend itself better, wouldn't it? To some like snooker, but football, yeah. God.
And for those
right,
well,
look, I think we've done the game to death. I mean, Wyman, I think Nigel resisted the temptation to bring him back into the match day squad, because you don't want him breaking down like he did at Hull. I'd be very, very surprised if he didn't make the match day squad at the weekend at Leicester, which we'll finish with what we think about the Leicester game. A couple of things to talk about. I mean, I think it's being addressed by you first, Mark, on this. I listened to Gary Hours on Monday on Radio Bristol. There was no spokesman, no official spokesman from the club. Still nothing official from the club other than the usual Pravda-style press release. Gary was very guarded I said he was very measured in his comments on a post on the forum, and somebody put, I thought, a better word than I'd use, and said, very guarded. And then Nigel, if you heard Nigel last night, it was very diplomatic. These things happen, almost describing a change of structure. But Mark, we'd had a pop at Phil for his lack of visibility. He didn't turn up for the supporters club and trust meeting on Thursday. Nigel revealed in the Radio Bristol interview, in fact, last night, that he knew Phil Alexander was going as far back as Thursday. So bearing in mind that he didn't start to break until Sunday. But what do you think of Phil Alexander going and how the club have managed it? And Nigel said, doesn't really make much difference to me. I'm just a football manager and this is not my department. You first, Mark.
It seems on the outside like a very political thing. I think there was obviously a clamour for some communication from the club. So Alexander's very much been the fall guy who's had to explain Steve Lansdowne's reasons for not pumping money in from the sale of Alex Scott. So he's very much had to do that. Fans didn't know what Alexander did. We knew that he came from a very commercial background, but was he directly involved in the recruitment of the players? No. And something's obviously gone wrong, and they come to a mutual agreement, and he's moved on, which is why there's no replacement. It's not that they made their mind up, or Phil said, well, it's not for me. It's, if you, you know, you've got to be subjective about. On the outside, I've got to be subjective because we don't know.
We don't know anything. I think what we can say is that probably Mark Ashton was on about 400 grand a year. He's on 250, and it's a cost saving. If there's going to be some restructure, no, I think he would be on 250 in. You know, because he was out to grass when he finished at Crystal Palace. He only got this job because Richard Scudamore recommended him. Yeah, and he was chief executive of the year.
There seems to be a big problem because he was brought in for a reason. He had a great reputation at Palace, although that reached the end of its natural life. So he had brought into City to do a job, we believe. And he wasn't able to do that.
We don't know what that job was.
There appeared to be disparity between what Nigel Pearson and Brian Tinian thought about the recruitment and what Steve Lansdowne decided to do. That was a little bit more fluid.
Obviously, Ian, you're shaking your head in the background there, as I can see. I just want to say with Mark, somebody said to me last night, and he said, nobody's in the know, but it was just one fan's theory.
Yeah, it's just all subjective. We're never going to know, are
we?
We're not going to know.
His theory was that, maybe we lined up a couple of players of a type that Dave Fevs thought we should be getting with Scott going, 1.5 to 2.5 million. And, that was agreed between the chief executive and Tinian and Pearson. And then Lansdowne pulled the plug, a bit like in 2015 with Andre Gray and, dare I say it, Harry Maguire. Right, Ian, your say on this. You've been shaking your head frantically in the background there. What did you think?
Well, I read an article in Bristol Live and it listed the things that have happened since Phil came through the door. What I wasn't sure about was who'd done it, because it listed a number of things. Players signing new contracts. Lots of players have signed new contracts. Rob Atkinson, Zach Viner. So was he responsible for that? And as CEO, I would expect him to be responsible for costs, and wages are one of your biggest costs at a football club, if not the biggest cost. So did he do that? Did Brian Tinian do it? We know from days gone by and currently that Steve Lansdowne sets all the budgets. Okay, so Steve Lansdowne won't say, well, you're not allowed to pay anybody more than X thousand pounds a week, but he will say the total wage bill needs to come down. And it was a figure he himself quoted, and it was somewhere between 18 and 20 million for the size of the club with the turnover as it was, which is about 32 million. Brian Tinian said in an interview that there were two players that the club had missed out on, they couldn't get. Now, we don't know the reason for that. It could be money, it could be geography. could be the player didn't want to come. So, but we got some others that were high on the list. And this is the way that Brian Tinian's explained recruitment, that his, him and his team get a list of players. They go to Nigel Pearson and say, who do you want? And Nigel Pearson says, well, I'll have him and him. And if I can't have him and him, I'll have him and
him.
Well,
you have a first pick, second pick and third pick.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. And that's how I would think 90% of clubs do it. So I don't see anything wildly complex. So you hear various rumours that come round, and one says he wasn't prepared to move to Bristol. Did he? Here you are. Here's one of those coaching. Did he spend enough time in Bristol? Did he spend enough time in the job and not perhaps working from home or whatever, which you could easily do with the job he's got. You don't have.
And interesting you say about working from home, Ian, because I'd heard that you didn't see him around much at the HPC, which is obviously the admin centre as well these days.
What I found strange was he seemed uncomfortable at being questioned about anything. Now, when he was on the programme, I think it was Richard did it on Radio Bristol, and he was asking him some quite straightforward questions. Nothing, you know, nothing personal, nothing where you'd think, well, hang on a minute, what do you want to know that for? And
yeah, well, we saw him at Senior Reds.
I didn't see him at Senior Reds because I was.
But he was like that. You know, he said, "Oh, I can't talk about that." It was very. Oh, I can't say. He was very, very.
The one that I think got to a lot of people was when they said, "Well, is the club up for sale?" Well, that's not something that gets discussed with me. You're CEO of the football club, man. Yeah. You're not some bloke that you know that works on the turnstiles or is as administrator or something like. You are the main man down there. Obviously,
well, you're the main man of Bristol City Football Club, not Bristol Sport.
Some yes.
Difference.
Yeah, there is. And you've got a guy called Martin Griffiths, who's the key man when it comes to things like the building. And he does sporting arena and the sporting quarter and all that kind of stuff. That would be Martin Griffiths does that, and that would be nothing to as opposed to Mark Kelly, who runs Ashton, runs the football club, you know, all the conferencing facilities, pop concerts, all that kind of thing. So it is a little bit of a conglomerate, I would say, and some people can work in an environment like that. I always found it much, much, much easier to work for what I called a family business and a business that was owned, because if I wanted anything, I went straight to the owner. And if he said yes, no one argued.
But in effect, in Bristol City is a family business. But look, I'm sorry to push on. The latest thing on the sporting quarter is that the local waste company have put in an objection. I haven't read the detail on it, but what I did hear, which was reported, that they want £1 million contribution from the club or Bristol Sport to put a roof on their plant. And then the resident objections won't come when the houses get built. Mark, let's move on just to wrap up. Saturday, here we are. Nigel Pearson is loved up at I was going to call it Filbert Street for a minute, up at the King Power or the Walker Stadium as it was. And we're coming up against a team that, let's not get away from it, 7 years ago, they were the champions of England, or Premier League, I mean, it's a bit of a free hit for us this weekend, Mark, isn't it?
Yeah, I never like that term because it, you know, it implies that we've got absolutely no chance and we should, you know, just throw caution to the wind and see if we get lucky. I mean, I think Hull City won there the other week in their fifth game, but Leicester had plenty of chances to score. They're going to get plenty of chances. I think we've got to play a little bit tighter. And obviously be a bit more patient. But the good thing is Leicester will have the majority of the possession. They'll go for it and we will get chances. When we do get them, we're going to have to take them. And a draw will be a very good result. And a draw will show us that we're making progress. So if we get a draw, I'll be happy. If we get a win, I'll be absolutely ecstatic. And you'll probably be able to hear me from there.
Would you make any changes, Mark? You know, I mean, because you can't really make changes. I mean, our away form has been fantastic. You can't really make changes without altering the formation because do you bring in Do you bring in Dickie?
You can. You can. You all you do is you the only change you could make is maybe Tanner for Hickman, but I think he'll go with the same starting 11, and he's happy with that. He's happy with Naismith at the back, but don't play a high line and leave Naismith as a last man, because Leicester will kill us if we do that. That we are a little bit susceptible to pace down the fullbacks, so we're going to have to watch that. So we may have to just be a little bit more patient. But I want us to see us improve some of our passing, because it can be a little bit loose sometimes. We will go for those long passes when perhaps shorter ones will do, but we're not going to get the time on the ball that we got, that we get in some games. So we're going to have to be very good.
No, I agree with you. If we get a point, that would be a tremendous result and keeps an element of momentum going. And obviously, we are in fifth at the moment, but there's another half dozen or five games tonight that, if we're there by close of play today, probably unlikely. But Ian, coming up against the champions of England from 7 years ago now, 2016, I think Leicester won it. Nigel Pearson going back to his hunting ground, I think he'll make it. On crutches, I said it was a free hit. Maybe that's a bit disparaging when you look at our away form. What are your thoughts looking forward to Saturday?
I think you go up there. We may have more of the ball than we think, because in Leicester's last win, they beat Southampton 4-1. They had less of the ball. They had 18 shots. Half of them were on target. Scored 4 goals. They've got a good side. I mean, they've lost some really good players, but when you look at a midfield of Ndidi, Dewsbury Hall, and Harry Winks, ex-Tottenham, that's good players. You've got Vestergaard at the back. I like the fullback, Justin. Their fullbacks get forward really well. You've still got Vardy up front, who, even at the age he is now, is a class act. Go up, but I think we should go there full of confidence. Our away form is good. What have we played three, won two, drew one. So, I mean, you can't knock that.
Yeah.
I think that, we go there. We're better. We know we're better on the break. Our pace could trouble them, because people like Vestergaard aren't quick. They're quick enough. You can't play in the Premier League for the time you did without having some pace. But let's go and try and trouble them. I think the one change, I don't think it'll happen, but you might see Cornick come in for Wells. Because as I said, but they're both having a bad time in front of goal. Let's be honest.
Do you think he might put Vyman on the bench?
If he's fit, yeah. And they've made him a new orthotic. And as an orthotic wearer myself, they do make a difference. But basically what he's got is it's like a padding around this injured area on the bottom of his foot. It's one of those funny injuries that, I mean, it's difficult, because you can't do anything. You can't walk, can you? So let's see. I mean, they've made this. If he trains and he trains properly and with this orthotic in and with the correction, you'd have Andy Vyman on the bench all day long, wouldn't you? Because he's one of the players that we've got at the club that can score goals. And when your centre forwards aren't scoring lots of goals, they've got to come from all over the side. You're not going to win many games of football.
You're not going to start him, but people have always said Andy Vyman's best position is in that central place.
Yeah.
And some people have been speculating about having Knight and Vyman in that buzzy around ball. But you imagine Vyman in the central role with Knight behind him, the pair of them together, it would be a nightmare.
Yeah, but it's a bit, that would be ultra attacking. You're talking about basically playing two number 10s. Your clubs do it.
But if you're leaving out, right, you're not based on, I think Naki's overall contribution, his fitness and everything like that, I think he's, he's like that striker that it just won't happen for him. But he's not in the positions either. But you could leave Naki Wells out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as you say, maybe start Cornick and play a Vyman for the last half hour. Now, Leicester might do to us what we did to Plymouth, and the game's out of sight. But I don't think you weaken the side by having Knight and Vyman in with that, what was it, Busy Bees style of play, to use
Lee. Yeah, I think it's going to, I mean, we're playing 4-2-3-1 at the moment with Wells Central. I think it's more likely to be 4-5-1. I mean, normally Cornick's first touch isn't brilliant, and I think Vyman's a better finisher. I'd have him on the bench, but if you're going to bring him on, I'd certainly play him as a central striker, because I think he's wasted playing, you know, wide in the free. Knight does play behind anyway, centrally, doesn't he? Because we got the that double pivot in James and Williams, and they're going to have to be especially good and really, you know, hold that defensive line on Saturday. So I think it's going to be more of a 4-5-1.
Could you not do a 4-3-1-2 and bring Taylor Hickman in midfield, right?
So I don't think he'll do that. What we got?
No, he's not. He don't like changes, does he?
I think we got to watch. Sykes has got to track those runs better. You know, when he gets forward, he hasn't got to leave too much space behind for Tanner to cover, and vice versa on the other side. That's the problem we'll have. Make sure you're not leaving the fullbacks exposed, because they'll kill us.
They will. Right, time to go. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you to Neil, who had to disappear. Ian and Mark, our Leicester review recording will be done live on the YouTube and Twitter at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning. I know Ian's going to be joining us. Mark, are you going to be able to join us at 10
o'clock? Yeah, I'll be there.
And anybody else, probably room for one more, I would think, but whether that's Neil, probably would be. But look, everybody, thank you for listening, and we look forward to talking to you all again at the weekend. Thanks a lot. All the best, everybody. Bye-bye.
Cheers, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good luck.
What if I've been unlucky? Really, I ain't got a thing. There's a time I always feel happy as a king. When the red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, cheer up. The sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When red robins are bobbing along. Red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red robin starts bobbing along.